Fatigue is often linked to long-term stress, and in this article we're going to look at how this translates in terms of hormone functions. We're going to look at two hormones in particular, the adrenals and then the thyroid. So we all understand stress is what we inherited from the time when we needed to get out of trouble fast. We have a system wired up to put us into alert mode, to move fast, kick fast, to fight fast, and to get out of danger. And that is still around even though we don't need it in the same way anymore. It kicks in just the same way, whether it's a ferocious tiger or whether it's a letter from the bank. The problem with the last one, of course, is that we're sitting down. We're not jumping and fighting, and so the reaction, which is the same, bottles up inside us. So we have this modern problem of stress, unrequited stress, if you like, that builds up inside us. The adrenals are the glands, the hormone-producing glands, that manage stress in the first instance. And there's two parts of the adrenals. There's a core, otherwise known as the medulla, and an outer ring of material called the cortex. The core is where adrenaline is produced, and that is produced instantly, and it follows activation, almost instant activation of the autonomic nervous system, the sympathetic nervous system. And the medulla is part of the sympathetic nervous system. So it pumps out adrenaline almost instantly when stress is perceived. Adrenaline then sets up the emergency reactions, including, you know, increased heart rate, increased blood to the muscles that are where it's needed, and cutting down blood to other parts, by the way, including your digestive system. So the blood and the muscles and the brain get most of the blood. And blood pressure goes up mainly to help that shift. So blood pressure is always associated with the stress response. Having produced the adrenaline, the first tissues that know about this is the next ring around the medulla called the cortex. And so this is in part meant to manage the response to adrenaline, and particularly in producing cortisol and the various other steroid hormones linked to that. The cortex also produces a fluid retentive hormone called aldosterone, and also produces the precursors to the sex hormones, estrogen and testosterone. And we'll see why that's important in a minute. So the adrenal cortex is particularly part of our management strategy with stress, and that the cortex and the medulla together make up what we call the adrenals. There was a man back in the 1930s in Canada called Hans Selye, who came up with a first use of the word stress in relation to the human condition. It hadn't been used before that. And he looked at a pattern of stress responses, which you'll see in the diagram, where initially when we meet a stress, we sort of respond to it, we rise to it. It's something that we get up and get on it with the day, and even get a bit of a thrill out of doing that. If the stress is dealt with, that's the end of it. If it hangs around for too long, if it hangs around for any length of time, then you accommodate to it and sort of hardly notice it after a while. It becomes part of your furniture. But if it keeps on going, then it wears you down and you get to a state of exhaustion. And that's what he called the general adaptation syndrome. And it's widely understood as a reasonable way of looking at how we manage ongoing stress. Selye himself linked this to the adrenal and the other steroid-producing glands in the body. Those are the adrenal cortex, the ovaries and testes, and the placenta in pregnant women. Are the only ones in the body that produce steroids. And he, in effect, led the way to the notion of adrenal fatigue, which was coined later on in the late 90s as a concept. And people have, we know what we mean when we say that. The slight inconvenience is that there is no evidence that adrenal hormones do drop in exhaustion. What it seems more likely and better way of understanding it is that their role in the wider response, which involves the brain, hypothalamus particularly, and the pituitary gland at the base of the brain, the three parts of this cycle influence each other, and it's what we call the HPA axis, which you'll see the diagram there. And it's much better to see that adrenal fatigue is actually a discoordination of the HPA axis when several parts play their role in this. And we know that that can lead to all sorts of fatigue-related problems, notably disrupted sleep. And the overlaps significantly with what we understand as clinical depression. So there is this unfortunate confusion between fatigue and depression, which some doctors have tended to play on by prescribing antidepressants for people who are actually depleted. An interesting case of fatigue associated with these hormones is sometimes you see after the menopause in women who where the hormones drop significantly from the ovaries, of course. The job of the adrenal cortex is to fill up the gap, and for many going through the menopause is not a problem at all. And in a very simple sense, one can say that's because their adrenal cortex is coping well and can fill the gap left by the ovaries. Where that doesn't happen, then you are more likely to get the postmenopausal rundown, the depleted symptoms, including things like hot sweating and so on. We have some unique herbal approaches to this adrenal and HPA axis and introduce the adaptogens, which are plants that seem to work broadly. They support the body when it's down and help it overdo it when it's too stimulated. And it's a concept that was originally came up around ginseng, but has been really thoroughly looked at. And there's a lot of plants now which in their traditional use and even in their modern research show evidence of this remarkable ability to help the body cope with stresses, and there's some pictures of some of them there. We're going to talk much more about them in another article in this series. Interesting that they contain these steroids, plant steroids, which have no effect on our steroid hormone functions directly, but seem somehow to modulate or flip-flop the steroid activity in the body, optimizing it in some interesting ways. There is actually a significant amount of research going on into how this might be happening. There are various mechanisms that have been identified. Then we go on to the thyroid, and this is clearly involved in determining our general activity, and it can, when it's functioning well, it's simply regulating and working as a team with the other hormones in the body. But there are times when it can go overproductive or underproductive, and we call that hypo for underproductive thyroid, hypothyroid or hyperthyroid if it's overdoing it. In an underactive thyroid, fatigue can follow in each of these extremes. In underactive thyroid, you tend to get associated with low metabolism, weight gain, low mood, and sensitivity to cold. It used to be associated mostly with not enough iodine in people who lived far from the sea and who didn't have natural iodine in their foods. Nowadays, salt and other parts of the diet are iodized so that we can keep our iodine levels up. So this is much less common now. And most causes of underactive thyroid are actually due to immune disturbances. And we have the term Hashimoto as a condition that in which the thyroid is in effect attacked. That is also the case with overactive thyroid, another condition called Graves' disease, which can overstimulate the thyroid. And there you get anxiety, nervousness, irritability, mood swings. You don't put on weight, you tend to have a big appetite, you tend to be restless and irritable, difficulty sleeping. And there's a picture showing the symptoms of the two states. It's difficult with plants to target the thyroid. There are a few remedies that people have suggested might work, but there's very little evidence that they do. And my own work with thyroid is almost to ignore it and to look at everything else, and particularly to look at immune problems, because overwhelmingly they seem to be linked with both types of thyroid trouble. And there's a whole section on complex immune problems in our immune issue part 4, which you can go and have a look at.